A couple of 100,000 people come every summer solstice weekend to Worthy Farm near the town of Shepton Mallet. And that year, I was one of them. After we watched Muse together, I let my son slip off and spend some time with some people of his own age. Frightened to death to see him take his first steps into this unknown world, I asked a girl who was probably all of 20 to look after him. And by the time I was seated around a campfire with some fellow performers on my second pint of scrumpy, I was sure he'd be just fine. If I never have another Glastonbury, this will be enough, I thought. The cider drowned the lonely pangs of regret that I wasn't sharing this moment with someone close. I love my own company, but I'd like it if someone else would love it too. It turns out that wasn't my last Glastonbury. I've actually been booked every year since, so last year, with 2 hours sleep and a faint glow in the sky, I turned the ignition in the old diesel Skoda Octavia. Packing the car with tent, duvet, pillows, Wellington boots, sleeping bags and a guitar, we set off for the 7 a.m. Rosslare ferry to Fishguard. Hitting 60 makes us both rattle a bit, the Skoda in miles and me in years. Heading to a festival now requires homework. What will we listen to when we're on the way? Avril Lavigne or Lancôme? Dua Lipa or Jarvis Cocker? Kneecap or Charlie XCX? And how can the Sunday headline be an act I've never heard of called SZA? I've become an old fogey, definitely. Having said that, at the age of 60, my father would certainly not have been off to camp at a music festival. Not with cows to milk and hay to save, and a complete lack of interest in any popular music past Perry Como or Andy Williams, or at a push Johnny Cash. We rattled to a halt in the belly of the Stena Line ferry. We joined the hodgepodge of rumpled voyagers climbing the metal stairs, find a bench in the canteen, cover ourselves in the open sleeping bag, and rock-a-bye baby to sleep on the moving ship. 5 hours later, we're driving across the Prince of Wales Bridge from Wales to England, and the sun is shining. I'm not with my son this time. I'm with my new wife, just months after our wedding. So yeah, somebody did love my company. We pick up our laminates and set up a tent in under an apple tree in what's called the orchard, the performer's camping area. It sounds idyllic, but it's not. It's an uneven field dotted with spindly trees, and I'm not going to see Elton John coming out of his tent next door to wash his teeth at the one available water tap, or Dua Lipa stroll over to the Portaloo toilet roll in hand. Now, my neighbour will likely be a tightrope walker or a street performer who will later lope towards the festival hordes on stilts while dressed in pink pelican plumage. At 2 p.m. on Friday, I take to the Astrolabe stage with the Steve Frost All-Stars. Steve Frost, Andy Smart and Richard Vranch were stalwarts of the festival. They were there when alternative comedy was being invented. Steve and Richard were regulars on Channel 4's Whose Line Is It Anyway? Andy Smart loved festivals. He was at every Edinburgh, every Glastonbury and every Pamplona festival for 40 years. He died 2 years ago. This is already our second year taking to the Astrolabe stage without him. I'm holding my wife Nerea's hand and I don't take one bit of this for granted. We're watching Lancôme who sing, "When young people dance, they do not dance forever. It is written on sand with the softest of feathers. It is not written stone like the walls of the chapel, and soon it is gone like the soft winter's apple." It's our third Glastonbury together, but we'll treat it like our last.
From the sultry plains to the old green square back in old Maybole. For the past few years, my social media feed has looked like one long obituary filled with faces of fallen soldiers. Graham Dale, the Irishman who was killed in Ukraine in December of 2023 while fighting the Russian army, did not exist in my world before his death notice. The irony is that while I found safety and refuge in his home country, he went straight into the battlefield in mine. What made this Dublin-born warrior abandon his comfortable life and go to fight the invaders? This decision can be traced back to its roots in the book he wrote called The Green Marine, An Irishman's War in Iraq. Over 20 years ago, Graham obtained a green card and moved to Texas, USA. The world was soon shaken by the massive September 11th terror attacks. This is when Graham felt prompted to join the U.S. Marines and defend, as he put it, a way of life that was now his. He drew inspiration from the example of his great-grandfather, who had faced the Germans in the trenches of the First World War, some relatives on his mother's side, who fought the English to free Ireland, two uncles, who served in the U.S. Army, and others. He said he respected the fact that they had the courage to fight for their convictions. I was fascinated by the description of his deployment to Iraq. At times, I was holding my breath, or my tears, as I was delving into his book late at night. At other times, I was laughing out loud while reading it on my long bus trips to Dublin. I learned the name of his first love, and that he would often fall off the top of the bunk bed as a child. This tendency didn't change when he became a Marine. With awe, I observed the scene where he and his squad members were doing everything possible and impossible to save a wounded fellow Marine. Covered in blood, choking from smoke and spitting out the wounded soldier's vomit while performing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation as part of the CPR, Graham wouldn't stop until the evacuation helicopter arrived. I then knew that he would not give up until he'd done everything in his power, and even beyond that. What mattered was that we were brothers, and we had stayed together to the end, he wrote, looking at his experiences retrospectively. Graham had a hard time after the completion of his mission to Iraq. Not only did he suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, but he was also questioning himself and was questioned by others about his feelings regarding such a controversial war, where, as many voices said, dollars prevailed over other geopolitical motives. Fortunately, a certain somebody called Killer helped with his PTSD. Killer was the name of his Chihuahua dog that in one day did for Graham what doctors and counselors had been trying to do for a year, he explained. As for his attempts to find the meaning of the war, he wrote, I am bombarded by media reports from all sides, and official statements and general opinions. I am confused. I guess it would be a little easier to live with if the scars had been inflicted after fighting a conventional war that had clear goals and front lines, where the object was an easily defined cause, like freeing Europe or even defending a smaller country from aggression. For Graham, the war in Ukraine met those criteria. Years after his first war, he joined in with humanitarian efforts in Ukraine, and soon, despite being all too familiar with what war-related PTSD felt like, he enlisted in the Ukrainian army. Once again, Graham couldn't sit by and watch the terrible events unfold like it was a daytime TV drama. He fought for his convictions, not just for the lands, but for European values of freedom, equality, justice, the rule of law, accountability, and transparency. He might have realized that for some, this war is also perceived as controversial. Different narratives are fighting their own battles against each other. Propaganda is the number one weapon of totalitarianism, and it works in all languages. The Ministry of Truth, as so well described in Orwell's novel 1984, is working nonstop to rewrite history. Different voices might bombard our minds and influence opinions, but I still know that Graham Dale was doing the right thing. My war is over.
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for the Fish Report here on KSDP. Let's start out with the numbers for the Alaska Peninsula, as well as our first harvest summary for the Chinook Management Area. And some escapement. No new numbers in Bristol Bay, though, and we don't have anything from Kodiak either. But starting out with the numbers for the Alaska Peninsula, there was a total of 71,000 sockeye harvested across the region yesterday, for a total now just shy of 400,000 through June 21st, 2025. 11,000 pink salmon were also harvested, for a total of 62,000, and 13,000 chum, for a total of 98,000. Breaking it by area, the June Chumigan Island area had 14,000 sockeye delivered yesterday, just shy of 70,000 to date. 5,000 pink salmon delivered in the Chumigans yesterday for a total of 17,000, and 7,000 chum for a total now of 22,000. South Unimak area had 17,000 sockeye delivered yesterday for a total of 262,000, 6,000 pinks for a total of 44,000, and 4,000 chum for a total of 74,000. More action on the North Peninsula. The Northwestern District was open for the first time this year. They're at 6,500 sockeye so far and 1,800 chum salmon. Nelson Lagoon had 3,000 fish up the weir there for a total of 23,000. And Port Mueller to Outer Port Hyden had 31,000 yesterday for sockeye for a grand total now of 35,000. Moving over to the Chinook Harvest Report. Yesterday was 16,000 sockeye delivered, for a total now of 16,000 sockeye, and that was totally in the Chinook Bay area. The Central District doesn't have any numbers as it is confidential. Eastern, Western, and Perryville reported no sockeye harvested, so a total now harvest of 16,000 in the Chinook Management Area. Looking across the Alaska Peninsula for escapement, 20,000 sockeye went up the weir yesterday in Chinook. They're at 140,000 to date. And that's really catching up to 2016 now at this point. Nelson River, 14,000 fish up the weir yesterday for a grand total of 61,000. And that is six times more than the next closest year. 2023 had 11,000, so almost six times more than the next biggest year in the last 10. So a little bit of an unprecedented escapement in Nelson. 2,000 in the Bear River for a total of just under 12,000 to date. And again, that's kind of the midpoint for them. Illinois, 400 fish up the weir. They're at 15,000. Another midpoint year, but looking pretty healthy. And then Orzinski with 30 fish up the weir for a total now of 455 to date. 2016, this time they had 276 fish, but still the best in the last 10 for the Orzinski system. Illyuk was flooded. They're at 23 fish to date. Bristol Bay harvest, again, nothing new for the Bristol Bay management area as of yesterday, the 21st. They're still reporting 350,000 sockeye delivered so far to date. Looking back on June the 20th of 2024, this time last year, the Bristol Bay area was reporting only 42,000 fish, so they're ahead of this time last year. That will do it for the Fish Report here on KSDP. This report is brought to you by Eastern Aleutian Tribes. Stay tuned for more great content and programming coming up right now on KSDP.
White, you would always win the fight. Bang, bang, he shot. Through the corridors asleep, past shadows dark and deep, my mind dances and leaps in confusion. I don't know what is real, I can't touch what I feel, and I hide behind the shield of my illusion. So I'll continue to pretend my life will never end. And flowers never bend with the rainfall. The mirror on my wall casts an image dark and small, but I'm not sure at all it's my reflection. I'm blinded by the light of God and truth and right, and I wander in the night without direction. So I'll continue to pretend my life will never end, and flowers never bend with the rainfall. No matter if you're born to play the king or pawn, for the line is thinly drawn between joy and sorrow. So my fantasy becomes reality, and I must be what I must be and face tomorrow. So I'll continue to pretend my life will never end, and flowers never bend with the rainfall.
Oh. give me a big smile. Ha ha hee hee ho ho hum hum. On how life should be lived and things should be done. But I'm here to say you gotta do just what you want. And when they start of that talk, talk, talking, remember just one thing.
The jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never, never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life. And someone sneaking round the corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know, where a cement bag just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the weight to dare. Five will get you 10 old Mackies back in town. Now did you hear about Louis Miller? He disappeared, babe, after drawing out all his hard-earned cash. And now Maggie Heath spins just like a snail. Could it be our boy's done something rash? And
now that Maggie's back in town. I said, Jenny Diver, whoa, Suki Tawdry, look out to Miss Lottie Lynn and old Lucy Brown. Yes, that line forms on the right, babe, not that Maggie's back in town.
Thank you. sound.
A long, long time ago, on graduation day, you handed me your book. I signed this way, roses are red, my love, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, my love, but not as sweet as you. We dated through high school, and when the big day came, I wrote into your book next to my name, roses are red, my love, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, my love, but not as sweet as you.
As sweet as you.
Then I went far away, and you found someone new. I read your letter, dear, and I wrote back to you, roses are red. Sugar is sweet, my love. Good luck. May God bless you. Is that your little girl? She looks a lot like you. Someday some boy will write in her book to roses are red, my love, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, my love, but not as sweet as you.
me and she dear mama you.
Without a mother, without a sister, or a brother, I'm what they call all to myself alone. Don't have a dollar, not a red penny. Don't even have a portrait of Jenny. I'm what they call all to myself alone. Some folk have the moon, others may have the stars. I would be content just to be where you are. Seems just like I had nothing to live for except the troubles which my life is for. I'm what they call all to myself alone.
Someone who loves me. I found someone who loves me. I found someone who loves me. I found someone who loves me. I know it's true. I love you. I found someone who loves me. Do you need someone to love you? 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 I know it's true. I love you. I found someone who loves me. Someone who believes in me. I found someone who really believes in me. I found someone who believes in me. I found someone who believes me. I know it's true. I love you. I found someone who loves me.
They're right, you know. He can sing, can Ringo. And as a matter of fact, Carolyn Hill and Jane Richards of Bognor think he's marvellous, and they also think that George should be called Gorgeous. Well, Gorgeous, would you mind reading this card, please?
Please sing Chains as we think it is absolutely fab. Love, Ross and Kathy of Norton Road, Wembley. Thank you, Ross and Kathy.
Oh, that's your posh voice, isn't it? That was George. So, the boys remove their shackles now to give us another track from their LP, Chains.
This song's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I called the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago, it was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant, she lives in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Fatsha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road. And off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile's better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it. And I said, yes, sir, officer, over, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage. After speaking Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obie could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on. He said, shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car, and that's what we did, and sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened here. They got three stop signs, two police officers, and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obie said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt. And I said, Obie, I can understand you wanting my wallet so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for? And it said, kid, we don't want any hangings. Said, Obie, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering? Obie said he was making sure, and friends, Obie was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, and have an escape. Obie was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obie came in with the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one, sat down. Man came in, said, all rise. We all stood up, and Obie stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures, and the judge walked in, sat down with the C&I dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obie looked at the C&I dog. And then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the C&I dog. And then at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, cause Obie came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't gonna look at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. You got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down and got my physical examination one day, and I walked in and sat down. Got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York. And I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I wanna kill. I wanna see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean kill. Kill, kill, kill! And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill! And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill! And the sergeant came over, pinned the medal on me, set me down the hall, said, you're our boy. Didn't feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they wasn't leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I when finally came to see the very last man, I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, what do you want? He said, kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested? And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped me right there and said, kid, did you ever go to court? I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and stopped me right there and said, kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid! And I walked over to the bench there, and there's Group W is where they put you. If you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime, and there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench. There's mother rapers, father stabbers, father rapers. Father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me, and one, it was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things. And he sat down next to me and said, kid, what'd you get? Said, I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage. He said, what were you arrested for, kid? And I said, littering. And they all moved away from me on the bench there to carry eyeball and all kinds of mean, nasty things till I said, and creating a nuisance. And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine, we were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things until the sergeant came over, had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 sentences, 58 words. We want to know details of the crime, time, crime, and else kind of thing you got to say, pretend to about the crime. Want to know the rest of the officer's name, and else kind of thing you got to say. And it talked for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. And I filled out the Massacre with the four-part harmony and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine, and I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there, there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words. Kid, you rehabilitated yourself. I went over to the sergeant and said, Sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on a bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on a Group W bench. Because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join an army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug. He looked at me and said, Kid, you don't like your kind. And we're going to send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends, somewhere in Washington.